see some serious shit.
Oh, just tell me when you're ready, buddy.
Oh, yes, sorry. We are recording. Sorry.
A little nervous there. That's how we should start. That's how we should start the show right now, actually.
When you change the routine?
That's what happens when you change the routine. As you can tell, that was supposed to be the intro to this week's Movie Moan. Hi, I'm Jamie. I'm the beauty of the site. I'm the sex appeal. Joining me, as always, is the brains of the show, the heart and soul also, Mr. Phil G. Say hello, sir.
And that's usually why I start the show, so Jamie can't make wild and inaccurate claims like that. But, you know, I'm going to let him... We'll just see where this goes tonight.
Well, what the hell is that supposed to mean? It was a compliment. You're like, but it's true. You are the heart and soul of the series, man. Like, it's all about your vision and, like, your... I mean, I love film, too, but, like, no one... I don't know. There are very few people I know who have such a love for movies that you do. And, like, your enthusiasm rubs off on us. I mean, every time people... We've had guests on here, they always talk to me afterwards, and they go, man, Phil was fucking great. But they always say that, like, they don't, like, I mean, I'm not, like, doing a joke at my expense, but, like, that's the first thing they always say is, like, boy, man, Phil was a really cool guy. This is like a setup, like we scripted this. It's not, it's the honest to God truth.
You know, Siskel and Ebert never had shows like this. You know, as much as we like to compare ourselves to them, you know, they never off camera when the show finished taping, they never said, you know, you were great tonight, dude. They never did that.
You don't think they ever did that?
No, I don't think so, dude.
They were so competitive. Because, like, yeah, I was watching the video. This is so sad that I watched this. But, like, them on Bob Costas, and they were talking about how, like, they dissect everything they say about one another.
Oh, yeah.
And they hold it back. And they catalog it in the back of their mind and will bring it up years later. Like, that time when we were on that show with that guy, you said this. Like, it's just amazing.
And we have been guilty of that. We have done that occasionally ourselves. But no, we just don't remember everything we say because...
No, but also there's, like, a thing about the difference between us is there was a genuine point where they really hated each other. But, like, I love Phil. Like, Phil is my dear friend. I love him like a brother. I don't feel that way at all. I think that Gene and Raj ultimately did love each other like brothers. But you could tell that their rapport was too much like that. But there was clearly that period where they weren't fans of each other personally. I've never felt that way about Phil. Like, I've never been like, God, I'm so sick of Phil. Like, I've never felt that way, ever.
Jamie, we're being cruel, neglectful parents here. We do have company tonight.
Our good pal, the wide sage, the Yoda to our group, Mr. Lucissima, who has been on from the start, but has obviously, he has a life and a wife and a young son who I'm sure are wonderful. I've never met them. Maybe I will one day, but he's living his life and he has been...
Don't
he
forget
has
the animals.
That's right. Oh, that's right, the animals who've cameoed.
Oh, fucking animals ruining our 2010 shows. I'll never forget. I'm just kidding.
No, they're wonderful, actually. But, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lucissima.
Wow, I feel like I'm on the wrong podcast here. Jamie, you're really getting into the Christmas spirit early. That's great to see. I think that maybe that upbeat Star Wars podcast that we did a couple weeks ago, Phil has rubbed off on him.
I think so. I mean, it's not, honestly, it is one of I don't have many regrets doing this show, but one of the few is that Jamie was not here for that. Well, obviously, we'll rectify that because, you know, there'll be plenty more Star Wars in the new year, but, you know, it killed me that he couldn't join us for that. Absolutely killed me. Slayed me. And also, don't forget that, you know, we have broken away from tradition, and I might as well tell you guys, folks, that obviously we haven't done a gift guide show this year. And there's a lot of reasons for that, mainly because, you know, we don't have the whole family here. Christina's not with us at the moment, and, you know, if Chris isn't here to give us cars, then we're not doing the gift guide. It's as simple as that. But, you know, I feel like, you know, we've given each other gifts now. The only gift that matters, love and brotherhood. And friendship, man.
And each other's presence is the way I see it.
Absolutely. What are we getting, Lou?
I'm having some lovely coffee right now. I'm going to give him a cup of coffee. How's that sound?
That's actually what I'm drinking right now.
Nice.
See? I think I'll have it.
With a butter pecan creamer,
actually. I'm drinking it straight because the creamer's not around. I don't like sugar in my coffee. How do you usually put your coffee, sir?
I usually just do a dash of milk, but on the weekends and the afternoons, I usually treat myself to some sort of a cream flavor.
Nice. That's your idea of living, the living daylights, living on the edge, as Timothy Dalton said.
Well, that or a glass of scotch.
With your coffee? Okay.
No. After.
Oh, that's a hell of a coffee.
You need it up there, man. It's like, what is it? It's minus 15 C, or for you metrically impaired folks, it's 5 degrees Fahrenheit today.
I love cold weather, but like that's the problem. Like, I've actually never asked you about this because it's cold like all the time. I mean, are you a fan of cold weather, or do you,
No.
Are you like a lot of?
I mean, I'll
take a fucking guess, Jamie.
Yeah, this is our first major, first full winter out in Alberta, and I must say that the snow here is like picture postcard kind of snow. Like it stays in the branches of the trees and that, and on the street lights and the fences, and so it stays very white and it's very pretty. But man, is there ever a lot of it?
That is actually, you bring that is fascinating to me. Is like you can't, unless you've actually seen that much snowfall before, it's almost blinded how bright the snow is when it's covered everything. I've seen it before.
Yep.
And you get it all the time. Phil, God, does he get it all the time? I think probably the UK probably rivals Canada for that kind of weather. I mean, how's the weather for you right now, buddy?
It's fine. It's delightful, actually. No, we very rarely see that kind of weather. Basically, it's all a question of regions, Jamie. Down in the south of England, yes, they will get heavy snow, they will get heavy rain, they will get famine and drought and things like that. But in the north, we're actually, you know, we can moan about the weather, but really, you know, we're pretty good up here. We're absolutely fine. So
what's the average? So is it nippy? Is it calming? I mean, what are we talking about?
No, I would say it's nippy. I would say nippy to fairly cold. Last couple of weeks there have been the odd day where it's been really freezing. The only problem for me is black ice. I don't know if you guys have that, but it's really basically because of the hours that I work, I don't see the sun. I get up early and it's nighttime and you can't see the black ice on the ground in pitch blackness. And then I come home, of course, you know, it's early evenings now, it's night as well. You can't see black ice. I have a penchant for falling on my ass a lot and it's really annoying. That's the only problem. Apart from that, it's Christmas and that. You know, I'm pro Christmas. It's a delightful time of year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like it's a lovely time. It's my favorite time of year because all the great movies come out. I love the weather, and this is me being the fatty of the group here. I gotta say, it's the best time of year to eat fatty foods and whatnot. Because I mean, this has to do with movies, folks. But they always put these little packages. They put like summer sausage and crackers and cheeses out. So I'm stocking on that for the winter, basically. They're really good. You guys laughed.
I thought you were going to start talking about buttered popcorn or something.
No, I eat that. I wake up to that.
Okay.
Actually, you know, you say that. I rewatched Argo, which is still my favorite movie this year or yesterday, and I went to it. I had to go out of town to see it, unfortunately. But the theater I saw it at, they barely buttered the popcorn. And I thought about you, Phil, because I was like, you know, you don't get any of that good stuff. And in fact, they had no salt either. Like, they had these little brand names of bullshit salt. So it's not just like salt. It's like white cheddar, jalapeno. But you have to pay for that extra shit. I don't want that crap. Just give me salt. They didn't have any. I had to eat my popcorn straight. Wasn't that good?
No, that's inhuman. That's terrible. I mean, no, you get it. You have to look. It's a lovely food, but it's. You know, it does need seasoning. I think everybody would agree with that, unless you're some kind of vegan prude who likes their popcorn organic without anything on it, and I have no respect for you. You have to have it with something.
This is a bottled-up anger, apparently, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't know Phil felt this way.
Now, actually, let me ask you a question about that, Jamie, because I've always seen in my mind, I've always had this fantastic idea for what they could do with popcorn here. And you know, because then I thought about it and I thought, well, I bet they've already done this in the States, but I don't know if they have. So let me put it to you. I've always liked the idea of basically there being basically an ice cream counter version of popcorn. Yeah, the popcorn's just popped and it's not seasoned, but then you have a choice of seasonings, all kinds of crap. Yes, cheese, I know that's a big favourite. Spices of kind, garlic maybe, if you're so inclined. I've never tried that. And just classic butter if you want to go like that. toffee, and that's a big one over here. Has anybody ever done something like that over there?
Or popcorn, for salts on your popcorn.
Yep. At the, really? At the AMCs here, they have, you get your popcorn and you go to, almost like a stand, you know, like where you usually get soft drinks and that, and you can choose the flavorings and the butter on your own.
Wicked!
Yeah.
That's actually, because I'm the only ones around here, because Lou is probably the one of the three of us here this evening, folks. He's around, theaters everywhere, so he doesn't have a problem getting advanced tickets or stuff like that. But the only chain I got around me personally is, Regal and Cinemark. That's all I got. So you've got AMC and a bunch of others, or just AMC?
Yeah, Canadian version Cineplex.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that
out here in Alberta, we only have those two chains. When I was back in Ontario, there was tons.
Now I'm curious, they do they'll do particularly Regal. Oh no, Cinemark does this. Is they'll have digital showings of special movies. The Retracts guys do. They'll play something, or they did Lawrence of Arabia a month ago, and I couldn't make it, but I really wanted to go.
Yeah, they have those on Monday night. Yep.
Oh, every Monday.
Yeah.
What's tomorrow night?
Oh. Well, why don't you talk about something? I'll go to the site and see what I can see. I just recently saw Wrath of Khan. I think I mentioned that to you a while back with my son, so that was cool.
You little segwayer, you.
There you go. That's a great segue. So, folks, this week the teaser trailer for Star Trek Into Darkness came out. I'm sorry, I have to do that voice. I don't know where it came from. We didn't make a joke about that, Phil. I just randomly did it one day. I just couldn't help it.
But it's that title is... No, we've got to have our way of doing things. Everybody's got to deal with this title, and this is our way of coping with it. It's a coping mechanism.
We've got to deal with the title. We've got to deal with the fact that, as our frequent guest and good pal Robert Meyer Burnett has said many times, it's not really Star Trek anymore. And as much as I love the reboot, he's right. It's not. And it looks pretty
awesome. Well, it is, but it's Star Trek Extreme Rock and Roll.
Like the 90s Star Trek, basically. Yeah. It's like Poochie. That's what it is. No, I'm kidding. It's not Poochie. No. Folks, don't crucify me.
It's the Dark Trek is what it is.
But... Dark Trek. Oh, my God. Yeah, I guess. No, but okay. So let's just get out of the way. What do we think, Lou? You're the guest. What did you think first, sir?
Well, of the trailer in general, I thought it was a fantastic trailer for Joe Average moviegoer. So I thought there was a lot of action. I think they definitely set up what the film is about, but without giving away the goods. And it looks like it's going to have a lot of great action scenes. As a Star Trek fan, obviously I would like to see some more character stuff, but that's not what this trailer is aimed at. And, they're just basically aping what other successful movies of the last 2 or 3 years have been doing. So it's very much a trailer in the vein of those types of trailers. But I saw some very unexpected images. And for Treks, it mixed in some what I think is deliberate misdirects.
I think so. I agree. I know which image you're talking about. It's got to be
misdirect. Well, there's two, I think. But I think there's two iconic, well, not iconic. I should say, if you're a Star Trek fan, there's a couple of images that you see that are misdirections. But we can get into that a little bit later.
No, we'll go and get into it now, with all due respect. So we know we're going to go ahead and spoil it. So if you don't want to see it, you shouldn't have watched the trailer. You're fucked. so the one image is the ending to Wrath of Khan is the glass shot, the hands quote unquote holding. What's the other one? I don't remember the other one.
Well, it's not an icon. I my enthusiasm got the better of me. I'm sorry, but it's just a particular style choice for the character played by Alice Eve. Her hairstyle is very reminiscent of a character from the second pilot where no man has gone before, but I don't think she's playing that character.
I think she's playing a new character, isn't she?
No, she's playing a canon character.
Ah, so are we just going to have to admit it that it's Carol Marcus and just get it over with?
Well,
that's not what Lou is saying, though. I know the character he's talking about from Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Sally Kellerman plays Elizabeth Dent.
No, nowhere marble eyes in sight, though. So that's a bit of a damper in the theory.
I love the fact that they had this weird thing about they turn into a slasher movie for 2 seconds where she screams at something off camera. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's weird. It's not bad. It's I haven't seen that in a while.
Girl can scream.
Yeah, absolutely. Phil, what did you think?
I enjoyed it very much. It's one of those things where now every teaser trailer It's the same. It's just a question of execution. It's basically, it's always going to be a minute to a minute and a half. It's always going to be fast cutting images, and it's always going to have bah! Sound effects. And it's just a question of whether that trailer actually has a message in it, something to say about the tone and the style and the feel of the movie, because that's all you really can sell in a teaser trailer. And I feel very much the same about this as I did about the Iron Man 3 teaser trailer. I loved that trailer because I thought it was, you know, it really was selling of the tone. That one had, I think that one was longer, so it, you know, it has a bit of an edge on this one. This one is a trailer to a trailer, which we'll be getting shortly.
Which I had no idea, by the way. Did you guys know that? I had
no
read the damn description. I was like, wait, this is enough right here. Like, this is perfectly suitable right now, this minute-long footage, to be the teaser, and apparently it's not. There's more.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and the longer version kicks ass too. So
like this, I mean, I get to get my opinion real quick. I agree with everything these two gentlemen just said. It did everything a teaser trailer to a sequel needs to do, and that is to up the ante, raise the stakes. Shit gets real. Whatever term you want to use. There's a lot of despair, a lot of destruction, a lot of carnage going on in 1 minute. And you know, the thing about Star Trek is that the one thing that they were able to keep. That Star Trek, one thing that Abrams and them, Lou, I think you'll agree with me, this, the thing that's about Star Trek that they did keep is that Star Trek, it's upbeat, it's fun, it's the future. And I like that they said, we're gonna go the opposite of that for the trailer suggests that this movie will be very dark. We're gonna go the opposite route. Yeah, there is a thing about, well, dark, you know, cause we're lazy, we gotta compare it to Dark Knight, but, you know, But it's a sequel thing. It's not just a Dark Knight thing. Yep. We can look at a lot of examples where the first movie was this way, and the second movie, shit got real. And everything got crazy in the second movie. So I don't know if it's just...
Having said that, though, Jamie, that poster, come on.
Oh, it was a nice Star Trek emblem. I liked it. No, I'm really glad you brought up the point about the darkness, Phil, because I understand like the initial reactions, like because everything... A lot of movies are dark nowadays, but on the other hand, I'm kind of going to myself, seriously, folks, are these the only movies you're watching? Like, don't you watch other things that are not dark? It's like they're saying that everything that's coming out is dark. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I only watch two or three dark shows. A lot of the other shows I watch are quite a bit lighter. So to hang that hat on every movie that comes along that wants to go a little bit darker, I think it's just like a cheap criticism.
It's also a cheap criticism because, like, the third biggest movie of all time, the biggest movie this year, is a very light, frothy action-adventure superhero movie, a.k.a. The Avengers. I mean, that's not dark at all. I mean, well, Coulson dies, but I mean, you know, oh, spoiler. But, come on.
No, it's still like fluffy.
So I find that's a bit of a lazy criticism. I only agree with it from the perspective of, like you guys are discussing the teaser poster and the tone. Yeah, a lot of this similar type of marketing is being done, but I don't really think that's indicative of where a particular franchise is in its life cycles. So.
We should also keep in mind, though, Phil brought up an excellent point about comparing it to Iron Man 3. Kevin Feige has kind of reneged a little bit and said, guys, it's not that serious. It's like, well, buddy, the 2 minutes you showed me said it's very serious, so what is it? So I wonder, I mean, that was very interesting to me that he said that. He shouldn't have said that, by the way. He should have kept his mouth shut. And
can I just pick up that point, actually, Jamie? Because it's really annoying me. Because it is, unfortunately, but it's just one of those cases where they need to really just... clench their buttocks and realize that you are not going to make anywhere near the kind of money that you made with Avengers. We all know that. Now, there's nothing wrong with doing something that may turn off the little kids, the littlest kids. You know, there might be, if the movie is what the trailer showed, then you might have a situation here where little kids who, you know, watched Avengers and absolutely loved it, they go into Iron Man 3 and they get a little bit traumatized. We don't know. We have absolutely no idea what's going to happen in the movie. But, you know, when selling it now, they're terrified that everybody thinks it's going to be, you know, 40 minutes of Tony Stark in a cave being tortured or something like that, you know, where he's not Iron Man. It's like, no, don't worry about it.
Well, that's a credit to the first movie, though, is that it's a very dark subject matter. It's very real world, real worldly. And yet, it's so fun. I mean, as you said, like the hero is in a cave for 40 minutes, or 30, maybe 25 minutes. And yet, the whole movie has this very fun atmosphere, fun vibe to it, and it's just, that's interesting to me. But I mean, you know, those little kids, I mean, that's a very great point, Phil, but they'll be back. I mean, what are we talking here?
I know. I mean, it just seems to me, though, that what Lou's talking about is really, really interesting, because it just seems like what the movie is when we go down and see it really doesn't matter whether it's dark or not. What matters is that it's good, entertaining. I don't think tone comes into it at all for an audience. I really don't. I mean, there is a certain percentage, a very small percentage of people who I think are immature and say, if it's not dark, if people don't die in this, it ain't worth it, it's not cool, but I really don't think most people...
Well, I mean, there's still this attitude about what you call dark, though. I mean, Christopher Nolan has been called a dark guy, and, I mean, we spent the last...
It's an overused word. What does it mean?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, I mean, but let's just be fair, like, Dark Knight Rises is a movie that, you know, I mean, that's not a very dark movie. Everyone keeps saying it's dark, and it's like, what are you talking about? Like, the not only does good triumph at the end over evil, but every good guy... Except for Matthew Modine lives at the end.
And the mayor.
Well, he's kind of an asshole.
And plus, there's very few nighttime shots in that movie.
No, yeah, that's right. But my point, it was a stylistic choice.
Yes,
I watched the movie brilliantly.
Yeah.
But my point being is that it was just like, you know, we're calling things something that it isn't, though. Dark Knight Rises, I don't think it was a very dark movie. I mean, it is a dark movie, obviously, but it's not as dark as you keep playing it up at. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Phil.
Well, I was going to say, what is important is it's the way that darkness and that tone is used as a marketing tool. And this is what Lou's talking about. This is how all modern blockbusters market their movies. We'll talk about Oblivion in a minute, and we'll get back to this. But you know, what's the one line that everybody remembers in the Dark Knight Rises marketing? Why didn't you just kill me? Your punishment must be more severe. That's not light and fluffy. You know, that's very much selling a tone of we're going to hurt this guy. All the marketing was, as you said, Jamie, does Batman die? That's not la 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 la. And this is all like, will Earth be friggin' destroyed by this one guy? You know, who's going to die in the Star Trek cast? Someone's clearly going to die.
Yeah, so can we go ahead and get right now, like, two things about Star Trek, and we'll move on real quick, folks. One, who dies? Does anyone die? Lou, what do you think?
Well, are we speculating about this because of that hand shot? Because...
I think
Cumberbatch's character dies at some point, probably at the beginning of the movie, because I think that's who the funeral is for, the Starfleet funeral with the flyover, because that's a missing friend. And the hand shot has been confirmed to be Spock and Cumberbatch's character, and it's not Kirk and Spock. So I think it's Cumberbatch's character that dies, and somehow he comes back. And I think Spock is the one that has a relationship with his character and not Kirk. But if you're asking me out of the original cast, is anybody going to die? I don't know. I just can't see them going that dark that quickly. I mean, they got one more movie left. If it was the third movie, then I say maybe. But I don't see anybody from the original cast dying in this next movie.
Interesting. What do you think, Phil?
I have a theory about this. I do indeed. I think very much that we are going to end up with a cliffhanger situation here. I don't know if Abrams is going to make a third one, but it's basically going to be a situation where he's going to have Paramount's balls in a sling. It's going to be another one of those situations where basically everybody's going to want him to do it, and, you know, it might be a situation where he doesn't because Paramount's not going to wait another 4 years while he does other things. We're going to have a third movie, and they're going to have to basically inherit a story and an ending that Abrams has created. I don't think anyone in the main cast dies, but I think they're stranded somewhere. I think the ship is completely fucked and without power. Maybe the Enterprise itself goes, I don't know, that's possible, but I definitely think they are in some way stuck in a corner of the galaxy and they cannot immediately get out of it at the end of the movie. That's where
they're at the bottom of San Francisco Bay.
That was the most striking shot. When I saw that shot of it towards the end of the trailer where it's crashing towards San Francisco Bay, I knew then and there, it's like, this is going to be huge. Like, that's the money shot. And that's how you get asses in seats. And I feel like, all right, we're looking at one of the top grossing movies next year.
I know some people are probably getting tired of us talking about this trailer, but I do have two more points I'd like to get across. For me, the thing that really sells this trailer, and I had to kind of laugh, and you tweeted about this, Jamie. You said that well, Cumberbatch sounds like he's trying to do an Americanized Patrick Stewart, but I thought that was actually a good analogy because I loved his voiceover makes the trailer for me. But, like, they can show all that action, but he's got that, you know, that voice. So some actors have that voice. When you listen to them, they can sell a pile of poo, and you'll be happy about it. And listening to him doing this trailer, it just really elevated it for me. The other aspect I like of it, and maybe as an old-time Trekkie, I'm reading too much into this, but we've already kind of mentioned some of the iconic shots, but just the way the trailer was constructed, it's really driving the established Trek fandom crazy, trying to figure out who's what, and there's a lot of conflicting imagery and misdirects in here, and I think this is just a masterful trailer from that perspective. Whether it was intentional or we're just projecting ourselves into it, I don't know, but I think this just shows that the first film was conceived during the writer's strike, and
right.
As much as I like that movie, because it established new cast, the script is a bit of a mess.
There's holes.
Seriously, they could have used two or three rewrites, and with this one, with a four-year wait, my expectations are a lot higher, and I think they really have to nail it from a storytelling perspective this time.
Okay, one last thing, yes or no answer, quit. I'm just curious, because you've heard me bitch about it plenty of times. Is he Khan? Phil, you first.
No, absolutely not. I think it is. Can I actually extrapolate upon
sure.
that? Basically, because I want to acknowledge Robert Mybonnet's tweets. He's been making a lot this week, and it's been really, really interesting reading them. I wish he was here so he could talk about this. But he has a point which makes a hell of a lot of sense. I don't agree with it, but that's just because I'm being bullheaded. He basically feels that all of the marketing so far is really selling the villain. That is true. This is a huge $200 million plus movie. That is true. There is absolutely no way, in his opinion, that Paramount is going to spend all this time marketing this movie and building up hype around this villain unless it is the one villain that even normal people know about, ergo Khan. And I think it's debatable that anybody who's not watched Family Guy knows who Khan is, frankly, but that's just my opinion. So that's his theory. It makes all the sense in the world. I just don't believe it. I believe it's Gary Mitchell. I think all the signs point to that. It makes the most sense. And really, it's the one story which you can extrapolate upon, the idea of a guy who, for whatever reason, is angry or wronged and then gets godlike power in where no man has gone before. Obviously, they really couldn't show, you know, how far that went, the dimensions of that. He just faced Kirk on a rock planet, and there were some bouncy rocks involved. I forget the details, but it wasn't very big. Just imagine if that guy in that poster has the powers of a god. We are all fucked. I want it to be Gary Mitchell, and that's why I think it is.
Okay, Lou, who is he? Is he Khan, yes or no?
No, he's not Khan, for the reasons that's is it Mr. Burnett? That was it's a lovely theory for the marketing perspective, but they've denied that. I mean, they've denied that he's Mitchell as well, but I'm a little more ambivalent on that one. But Gary Mitchell works, but also I think, and I've been pushing this guy all the time, because I just think if you're going to do a retake on a Star Trek story, you don't want to redo Khan, because that's, you know, that's the pinnacle of what everybody thinks is the top Star Trek story to date. Do you really want to redo Gary Mitchell? Because Where No Man Has Gone Before is probably in the top 10 of most people's lists of best Star Trek episodes. So why wouldn't you take this opportunity to do something new and pick a character from a lesser episode that and make something better than what was originally cast? For me, that character is Garth of Bizarre, who, yes, it's not an awesome name, but was Kaiser Soze such a great name before we got to the end of Usual Suspects? I don't think so. But he's the character. I mean, Gary Mitchell is not the only one that has to go to the edge of the galaxy to get godlike powers. Anybody can do it. So why not make it this character who already had certain powers to begin with? And he was a fleet captain, and he could have, you know, back history with Spock that we haven't seen in the movie, because Kirk really can't have any because there wasn't enough time established in the movie, because he basically went from cadet to captain and within the space of that movie. So the chance that he had relationships with other Starfleet personnel that we're not familiar with seems very slim, whereas Spock does have some padding in his backstory. So I did just think that here's a chance to take a character that nobody really knows anything about and really go big with him, and I just think that would be a much greater opportunity. So to me, it's either Mitchell, in which case Robert Orci is lying, and he's also killed that character off in the comics, or he's Garth the Bizarre. So, and my heart wants it to be Garth, but my head's telling me it's Mitchell.
We should also just mention briefly, Captain Ed Hocken is here, but he was discussing this with us off air just before, and he had a wonderful theory, which I think we should share with you, which is basically that his actual full name is Gary Karn Mitchell, and at the end of the movie, he gets handed a bag, and the lady at the desk says he should use his full name. She likes that name, Karn, and that's where it's going. Because, you know, it is entirely possible that maybe, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch won't die in this movie, that maybe he'll, you know, be able to be continued. I think that's unlikely, but you never know. You never know.
Oh, and another thing, I'm sorry I forgot to mention, is like that volcano planet. Like, is that the Genesis planet from Star Trek 2? Like, I don't know. Very interesting stuff going on here.
Yeah. Yes, exhilarating, isn't it? Yes, I look forward to that very much.
I'm sorry, the correct answer is he's Gary Mudd. Moving on.
Harry Mudd.
Oh, I meant to say, would I say Harry?
You said Gary.
Yeah. That's what they're doing. They're comboing him. They're going to have Gary Mitchell and Harry Mudd. Gary Mudd, that's what happens. Because the timeline's been altered, ladies and
but
gentlemen.
But the options are limited as to who he is because, again, Orky has come on record and said he's a canon character. But the final thought I want to leave is, I don't care who he's playing, I think he's going to make a kick-ass villain either way.
I think Cumberbatch is going to deliver, and if he's con, and He's still fucking lazy writer, so just saying. Anyway.
We've got to know next week, though. This is getting ridiculous. We have to know next week.
Well, if we go with my prequel, or I don't know if you saw my comment on your podcast. Yeah. If they just take like an old Star Trek episode and play out the last act as the kind of like a teaser to a Bond film, like the Doomsday Machine would be awesome. But something like that, you know, that would be really cool. Or maybe they'll do the Where No Man Has Gone Before as the opening minute of the movie. And then we'll find out who the villain is that way.
But. I just hope if they're using a trailer voice, I don't know of anybody who's been watching, but on the Star Trek Next Generation Blu-rays, one of the lovely little things they've done is if you go to select an episode individually, it has the original TV syndicated trail with Mr. Trailer Voice basically saying, next time on Star Trek. And you know, if they're going to do a trailer voice, I just hope it's that guy. Next time on Star Trek Into Darkness. Is Data a man or an android? You got the idea.
On the next exciting episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
I always thought it was more like, next time on Star Trek. It's not that.
How am I saying it? It's really good because they basically say, they emphasize the star. They go, next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation. It's
they call it Star Trek.
Possibly.
I've heard it many times, Trek, and I made one mistake one time in high school. I said it's called Trek, and people thought I was a dick. And I think that's where the legend of film nerd Jamie started.
It's interesting, actually, because they have these... There's another one that I remember. It's one of these pointless little things I remember, but being a Superman fan, I would. You've probably seen it too, Jamie, if I know you the way I do. There's like the first time they shoot Superman 2 on ABC... Like it was the Monday night or the Sunday night movie, they had this little trail for it. And for some reason, Trailer Voice, at the end of it, he emphasized the first syllable of the title to an absurd length. He called it Superman 2.
Gene Hackman, Margot Kidder, and Christopher Reeve.
Man, this is going to be good. Superman 2 next.
Yeah, they don't do that anymore. No, that's sad, actually. I was actually watching videos of, like, this is funny. They were playing, and this will be our next segue, actually, is they were playing like James Bond movies on ABC like in the mid-80s for like Goldfinger. It's like from like 85. It's like, that's so weird. It's like 20-odd years later, and they're playing Goldfinger on like the Sunday night movie on ABC. That's just so weird. Like, you don't, I mean, you just don't.
No, I know. It's not Goldfinger. It's Goldfinger.
I thought
the emphasis was on finger.
You're absolutely right. Goldfinger.
Well, as we all know, he can do a lot with just his little finger.
Skyball. It doesn't stretch.
They don't play like Sunday night movies anywhere. I mean, I think ABC was the last network who did it. They did the
because everybody does podcasts, Jamie. On a Sunday.
Apparently, we've been doing it for a while.
Or they're watching Netflix.
They do Netflix.
Well, actually, no. Sunday nights is Walking Dead night. No.
Well, not anymore. I mean, just saying.
No, not anymore. Yes.
No, not at all. But no, Lou, you wanted to talk about something about Skyfall. The movie's been out for a couple of weeks. It's done.
Yeah.
I think it's done okay business, but you want to talk about it?
Yeah. You know, well, it's, you know, people have been talking about the Twilight franchise and that, and you know, as much as I think Phil was totally caught off guard by the reactions to the movie when you ended up podcasting about it, it's pretty amazing that the Bond film has the number one, hit the number one, or taken over the number one box office position from Twilight globally, and it's broken the $1 billion mark, which...
It's going. It's on track, too. It hasn't done it yet, but it will by probably another week, 2 weeks.
Okay. In any event,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Well, it's amazing for a 50-year-old franchise to be in that position. So I just thought that was newsworthy because it's a movie that I think the general population seems to like a lot more than the diehard Bond fans, which is very interesting.
No, just Robert. It's just, I just can't get over it, man. I mean, it was just like, I mean, you know, he was with me. He was with me in the room, man. We were holding hands. We were experiencing it together. And then, you know, it's weird how, you know, you just take a week to digest these things. And,
Jamie Williams does not represent the views of Phil G on the Movie Moan podcast.
But it's
Phil, my advice to you is never play poker with this gentleman.
Absolutely. Abso-friggin-lutely. But the other point of news that comes into this as well, and this is what really caught me off guard, because I couldn't believe it. I literally could not believe it. It is one of those movies, and we get them occasionally, when you get to the point where the amount of money it's making stops making sense. You just cannot fathom it at all. And this week, Skyfall became the highest grossing film in UK cinema history, beating Avatar. The movie has been out for about a month and a half, if that. And Avatar was in cinemas for a great deal longer than that before it finished its run. And maybe they put the special edition totals into that as well, but that wouldn't have been much. That would have been pennies. But still, a phenomenal achievement. And I really can't...
Absolutely.
Apart from the fact that there's no other competition, there's nothing like it, and, you know, I personally always believe that the Twilight films are just very front-loaded, and they do drop off sharply. I could be wrong about that, but it certainly seems the case in my country.
They are.
Yeah, they are. And I mean, that's fine, but Harry Potter's the same way, so, like, we're not holding that detrimentally to Twilight, and, I mean, that's the way with a number of them.
It would have been interesting if we had a Potter film this year to see how it would hold up against Skyfall. I think
we almost had it. I'm going back and forth on
myself. Pick a statement and go with it, Jamie.
I'm sorry. No, but if you remember, like, in 2008, I mean, we were supposed to get Quantum of Solace, and then a week later, or 2 weeks later, we were going to get Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Remember that?
The bad one, yes. Yeah.
So you still haven't changed your views on that movie, huh?
We talked about that one. That's the one where the formula creaks. But you know what? After six films, it probably should. But I mean, this is just really interesting because you don't...
It is.
You start to wonder now... At this,
what's the reason?
Well, not quite that.
Because I'm not knocking the movie. I quite enjoyed it, but it's not the best Bond movie, and it's certainly not the best movie filled with the biggest action set pieces of the year.
Or even the best Craig version. Craig is
But it's just...
It is very entertaining.
It comes at a right time. I don't know what it is, because the set pieces in this one are probably the most scaled back. Can think about of any of the other Bond movies.
But, I never felt when I watched it that this is a budget thing. But I mean, in retrospect, I mean, it's clearly that's the issue. Is I mean, let's have the big finale in a house that will basically build on Pinewood.
It's like they had a special on trains because all the big action scenes involve trains in this one. But
they have a hard on for trains going.
I guess so.
They always love. Oh, they got to have a train sequence. I mean, they got to. It's so cool.
Yeah,
but
I
guys,
just...
I do. Let's. I do have one theory about it now that I'm thinking about it. I've only taken my dad to see two movies in the last 10 years. One of them was Titanic 3D, and that was just for a lark because he'd never seen 3D before. The other was Skyfall, and he very purposely wanted me to take him. And I do wonder how many other people have had that experience. I mean, you've got to admit, I mean, but James Bond movies, they tick all the boxes across all demographics. It's one of those movies where it's not just a word of mouth movie for people who go to the movies anyway. Someone comes back and says, oh, you really should see the movie. I really enjoyed it. But it's like, you know, they're talking to their parents, even to their grandparents, and they're saying, you know, they've named you James Bond movies out. Really, really good. You should see it. And they say, actually, that one does look good. I do want to see that. I think that's what's happening, partially.
Yeah.
In my country.
Oh, absolutely.
You walk out feeling good about yourself, or you just feel a little bit pumped. I think, you know, people may complain about the story being convoluted and whatnot, but it's kind of like the first Star Trek movie. You walk out feeling like that was a great movie-going experience. Like you said, it ticks all the boxes.
And by first Star Trek movie, you mean the reboot, not Star Trek the Motion Picture. Let's clarify this.
Yes, the reboot.
My old man died in that movie.
The Motion Picture is a great movie, but that's for another podcast. The director's cut is awesome.
I've never been able to finish that movie.
No, the director's cut is great. But yeah, it's
not on Blu-ray. Make sense of that. Why?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's not, unfortunately.
I'd have to redo
the effects again.
I will call it right now. That will be re-released on Blu-ray in 3D.
Shh.
I'm not kidding.
Isn't everything going to be eventually?
Well, I mean, could you imagine how psychedelic that would look in 3D?
In 48 frames per second? No, I don't.
Oh, jeez, God. I was actually talking to my best friend about this. I'm praying to God. God, I know you're busy. But will you re-release, like, 2001 on IMAX? Because I'd really like to see that on IMAX. Just saying.
I doubt it. They wouldn't even pay Douglas Trumbull for his documentary for the Blu-ray. Did you hear about that?
No.
It was reported on Digital Bits that, I don't know if it even has been reissued on Blu-ray, but yeah, there was in the works a special edition of 2001 for Blu-ray. Douglas Trumbull himself was going to be putting together his own documentary, about the film. I think pretty all-encompassing, and, I think one of us wouldn't pay for it. Because, you know, we've been talking about this a lot, studios don't pay for special features anymore. You either do it free of charge or you don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the same market anymore.
It just isn't.
And that Blu-ray has all the special features too. It's rare. I still have to move over myself, but I have to say, as I get older, I don't give a shit about special features as much as I used to. It's not a big deal for me. It's about getting the movie. I bought The Dark Knight Rises. I got it early, actually, and on DVD, and I didn't give two shits about the special features. I just bought the bare bones DVD because I wanted to watch the movie again.
And what special features can there be for those movies? We know they're doing this double dip next year, but I don't know what could possibly be on it, really. That sounds interesting.
There's the rumors that no one's going to do a commentary for them, and that's reason enough. If that rumor is confirmed, then that's reason for me to want to buy them.
If there's a really in-depth documentary about the movies, that'd be interesting. I'd love to see that, but I doubt it.
Oh, that or I want to see Christian Bale's screen test that they keep talking about, because it's a screen test, it didn't matter. They used, like, leftover suits from Batman Forever, so he was literally wearing, like, Val Kilmer suit for a screen test.
Right after he'd finished The Mechanic?
Yes.
That must have been interesting.
Yeah, exactly, that's the thing. That
would have been like a drape.
That's always been my favorite special feature of any of these movies, of the screen tests, because you realize, like, you're spending, what is the 2 to 3 minutes of footage, of raw footage, usually, that convinced the studio to invest hundreds of millions of dollars on this one guy? That's fascinating to me. And we don't see enough of those, unfortunately. I mean, we still haven't even seen Daniel Craig's screen test. I really want to see that. I understand you're not going to show the ones to guys who didn't get cast just because you got to give them approval. It's a Screen Actors Guild thing. It's also a pride thing because very few actors want to admit that they went up for something and failed at it. Right. I get that. But
which was cool when the Back to the Future stuff started to come out with Eric.
Well, that's because he has thick skin, and it didn't bother him one bit. I mean, I was on the whole cast with my buddy Clint Morris over at Movie Hall, and he told me out loud. He said, like, oh, Eric, he's friends with Eric. And he's like, Eric has always said, I would love to see the footage. Let everyone else see it. I don't care. Mm-hmm. But that's rare. I mean, unfortunately.
Yeah. Those, if I understand it, the other two candidates against Craig, they're rather well-known people at the moment.
I might have heard of them.
Yes.
The runner-up was a guy named Henry Cavill. Nobody. And the other one was Sam Worthington. Nobody.
Worthington.
Imagine, actually, I would rather see the Worthington screen test. It's because it's like, I've seen Cavill good more than I've seen Worthington. So it's like, I could see Cavill just being too young, and I still maintain my views on the guy as an actor. He's just not good. But he'll be fine.
Second thought, I don't think I want to see that.
Yeah, I take it you were not a fan of Immortals by that comic.
No.
Get out! No.
Immortals? I thought he was in Clash of the Titans.
No, we're getting our actors mixed. Oh, that's a good point. That's actually very funny, because, yeah, they both did movies, the Sword and Sorcery movies. That is weird.
Yeah.
That's weird. No, that
Daniel Day could have been in Immortals. Let's mull on that for a second.
Yeah.
Why not? You know?
But anyway, getting back to Skyfall for a moment, the interesting thing now is not, you know, why did this happen? As if it's a horrible thing, why did this happen? But, you know, I think the really, I'm going to say this, I think the really comforting thing about knowing that there's one operation left in the film business, which is under the direct guiding hand of a family of producers under Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson, is that I believe they are the kind of people who, you know, the amount of money this film makes isn't really going to change their plan for what the next one was going to be. If this was just in the hands of a studio, they would be saying, okay, people like Skyfall, let's make some more of them. You know, we have to have a villain who's like Silver in the next one. We have to have Satan Elms. It has to take place a lot in London because people seem to like that in the next one. Basically imitating success when you have no idea why it was successful. But I don't believe that's going to be the case here, which is comforting. I don't know if anybody else shares my optimism.
It's
no, I agree, but I think part of the problem or reason for that is I don't think anybody can come up with a reason why this is so successful yet.
I really don't know. I mean, I there's a part of me that thinks is the distance between installments was 4 years, which is pretty long for that franchise. Usually you do it every 2 years, maybe, and 3 years is also healthy. That's actually the best time is 3 years, but they went for four, and there was a point where if it had been delayed another year, Craig would have been out. He wouldn't have done a third movie, and it's weird to imagine that now. And now he's out. He's here for two more films, and I don't know if I said this on air.
I thought one more.
No, it's two more. He said they re-upped him for two more.
Wow.
And you know, I think that the last thing left is to do Blofeld. My fear is that they're going to make a big extravagant fantasy spectacle out of Bond.
So did they up him from one to two before or after the movie?
I remember after Casino Royale opened, they re-upped his contract big time. But then it became an issue about, hey, I mean, the delay with MGM's problems. And but no, they said, I think, Phil, you remember this article. They said, like, he's up for two more movies, and that's it. He's out after this.
No, he's up for two more movies, and then I found it very interesting how John Logan has decided he wants to pitch two movies. And I think very much, and this is what I'm excited about. We've talked about it before, but I think the last untamed frontier for the Bond series, they've done practically everything else, is to do the two-movie story. It's to do a two-parter, to do something huge.
And I think that's where they're going. They denied it, but to me, because, you know what, the other thing cool about that, Phil, is it would be like the old Fleming books, because they would end with cliffhangers.
And it's such a, it's just like, it's, you know, how do you go, you know, up from a peak like this? You say, we're going to be an event. You bring out a teaser poster, you know, like the one for Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, and you say, you know, part one this year, part two that year, both years, Year of Bond, we own you. That's what you do. You make it an event like that. I think that would be awesome.
I think Sony would be okay with it, considering the box office gross at this point.
That would be cool. There's a hell of a lot of questions about that. Do you shoot it with one director? Do you shoot it back-to-back? I'd be very nervous about that. But
yeah.
That's another topic for another day. We don't know yet. Mendez is his. It's interesting to me, on one final note on this, is that his role is there. It's replicating what happened last time. He is only as a consultant right now. He is supervising the writing, and it seems to me that he's going to look at what they got, and if he likes what they've written, and he and the Broccolis are seeing eye to eye, he will say, all right, let's do it, let's go. And I'm sure they're the same way, like they want to keep him. I have no doubt about that. But if he doesn't like what they've written and they can't see eye to eye, he will respectfully bow out, and they'll be, maybe we'll do it another time. I'm not so certain Mendez is going to come back and do another movie, though. I think, you know, a lot of these guys bullshit. I think I'm pretty decent at reading between the lines. He has said, look, I got everything out of me. I always wanted to do one of these movies. I did. I'm happy. I'm really great. I'm happy with the results. I don't necessarily think I've got another one left in me, and I kind of believe him, actually. I think he's at a wait and see thing. If John Logan can think up something great, then he'll go with it. I believe him.
And there's always that X factor of basically, what if my next movie or what if my movies down the line is an absolute horrible disaster and I need something safe to go back to.
True. Yep. Well, I think Mendes
keep your options open.
Absolutely, but also I think this opens up Mendes to other studio movies also. Mm-hmm. I think other studios are now going to look at him and go, okay, well, this guy could direct. I mean, I won't say Marvel, but like, you know, considering no. He's too expensive. But like, let's just say, for example, Warner Brothers / DC Entertainment. I mean, yeah, Star Trek 3, there you go, because I don't think JJ's going to stick around personally. But yeah, or a comic book movie or something else this guy could end up doing.
Tron 3, make it happen. And
well, what a mistake that is. Oh, well. It's their money. They can cover it with a Star Wars.
Yeah, let's move on to that real quickly. So there's a rumor going around they're serious about doing Tron 3.
It's not true. Let's move on.
Fair enough. If that's all you want to say, that's all we got.
It's like Green Lantern 2, dude. We have to wait. Oxygen is a precious thing. These people have lives. We don't want to waste their time. I am done with Tron.
I'm amazed that anybody would seriously think this is going to happen, though, and all that. Because Tron Legacy didn't do well. It did okay, but, like, they had expectations. They spent a lot of money on this, thinking that this is going to go over huge. And not only was the general public, were like, whatever, who cares, it's stupid, but the fans were that way, too. And Tron, with all due respect, didn't really have that much of a huge fan base to begin with. And they've got a cartoon going on, and I think the big tell here is that if they cancel the cartoon, then you know there's not going to be a goddamn Tron 3, besides having common sense, obviously.
Well, I can't think of a movie that had a longer promo lead-in that turned out to be such a disappointment. Like I saw the promos for materials for this the year before at the Toronto Science Fiction Convention, and they were there twice before the movie was released, and they were really pimping that movie, and I was expecting something big, but my God, all the resources were in the tech and not on the writing. I just can't believe that they released it in that story state. But,
well, the thing is, I mean, Lou, I mean, the way I was thinking about it in the run-up was that, look, it's so perfect that this is a Disney movie. Whether the movie is great or not is actually negligible. The legs that this has to expand. Well, no, to be honest, I mean, just as thinking as a businessman, not that I have one, but, you know, the the creativity that's in Tron, but the possibilities of what can be done in theme parks, in games, things like that for Tron.
It's got Star Wars potential if they could get a handle on it.
But that's the problem.
They never did anything.
No, but here's the problem, though. You own it. Just do the goddamn, just go ahead and do the rides then. You don't need a Tron 3.
Please.
You've got it.
No.
Please, yeah.
All they did was, because I saw it last year when I was over there, they did a Tron nightclub in the California park. That's it. Not even a Flynn's Arcade. Nothing.
Was Michael Sheen there?
I didn't go in. I was afraid. If I'd seen him, I would have.
It was too glowy?
Anyway.
It was too glowy
Electrify
for you.
Why the boys and girls lighten the mood. I'll lighten your fucking mood. You come here.
No, but speaking of... But the reason that, I mean, but there's a lot of common sense here, obviously. But that, all that aside, just the common sense, the logic that we have, and we think you good listeners have also, is the fact that Disney doesn't need Tron 3. There's no place for it because, as we all know, Phil and Lou were part of a great episode of Movie Moan where they talked about the acquiring of Lucasfilm. They're making new Star Wars movies. Segue to this next story is, you know, everything's about Episode 7 right now, and I think if the rumors are true, I think we're supposed to hear a director before the holidays, and we'll see if that happens. I think that will happen to end the year with one last big boom and go out. But beyond that, they keep saying it's going to be a new trilogy. They're saying spinoffs. They're saying all this stuff. Well, word came through the grapevine. Actually, I think it was broken by – it was told you, but I'm not going to give them credit because fuck those assholes. It was Boris Kidd over at Heat Vision. That said, they have assigned writers to new Star Wars movies past Episode 7. It's Larry Kasdan and Simon Kinberg. Of course, Larry Kasdan, you guys know, is responsible for writing The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and the greatest action-adventure movie ever made. That's right, kids, Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's,
Oh, I thought you were going to say Dreamcatcher. Oh, no, never mind.
No, that I did have a reaction to that movie, though. Did I tell you that story?
No. Tell us a story, Jamie.
Okay, kids, gather around. Unc's going to tell you a story. No, actually, I watched Dreamcatcher, and the movie was over, and I leaned over at Fran and I screamed, "What the fuck was that?"
Oh God!
Because it was so bad. I mean, remember, like, he steps on the big alien thing, and then Timothy Oliphant looks at Damian Lewis, goes, "Jonesy," and then the movie ends. It's like they discovered each other and found love or something.
I've never actually seen it, but I will now. Now that I know that
Oliphant's
in it.
Did I see what?
Dreamcatcher.
Oh yes, Stephen King.
See, he saw it. See, he's terrified.
Yeah.
Actually, he just said, "Yeah, that's all I had to say."
Lewis,
yes, I've seen it.
He's taking quite a reasonable position about all this. He doesn't seem traumatized at all.
It's a very bad movie.
I'm still recovering from Morgan Freeman's eyebrows in that movie.
That's right. crazy Morgan Freeman.
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
Shoot that motherfucker. Let me tell you, folks. But what do you? Okay, so Kasten. That's the big story. Now, they've kind of reneged a little bit and said, like, well, they're writing what could be spinoff movies. They might not necessarily be the official chapters. I think that's kind of horseshit, but we'll see. I don't think they're going to do the spinoffs personally. I think they're going to focus on the trilogy, and that's going to be it for the moment. And obviously cartoons, and I think Disney will be the ones to get the live-action show up and going that Lucas said he was going to do and he didn't. So Kasten, that's the big story. He's kind of going back to the well here. What do you guys think? I mean, I'm going to keep my thoughts quiet on this for a minute. What's your guys' take on Kasten going back?
All yours, Lou.
No opinion.
Okay, Kasten. Well, you know, isn't he kind of like the same age as George? I know he's not quite that old, but I like the choice of Kinberg because he's younger, but Kasten... He hasn't really done anything, has he, lately?
He's done a lot of script doctor work.
Yeah, like, if he's just doing a first treatment and somebody else is going to rewrite it, I guess there's nothing wrong with it, but I kind of like him to go with somebody younger. And this is not, I'm not standing behind my age group when I'm staying in this position, but I think Star Wars needs a new young attitude, and I think Lawrence Kasdan's time with these types of stories has come and gone.
Me, it just feels like fan pandering in the worst way. And I know I'm stretching my syllables there, but I mean to. I can't speak for his work as a writer over the last two decades, basically. I've not seen any of it, so maybe he's great. I have absolutely no comments about that at all. But it just feels like they're just saying it to get a rise out of us, and we're swallowing it. And it's not, I mean, look, anyone who knows the story, the true story behind the making of Empire Strikes Back knows that, you know, that was not just a question of Larry Kasdan writing a script and everybody going, okay, shoot, didn't happen that way at all. I mean, but he rewrote it. I mean, he didn't write the first draft. We were talking about this last week, weren't we, Jamie? Lee Brackett was the first writer, and then she passed away. Larry Kasdan came in.
Kasdan was signed because she died.
And absolutely not taking it with me. A lot of that movie is him, no doubt about it. He did some fantastic work, but, you know, also, it's, don't forget the Kirsch. The Kirsch, you know, rewrote a lot
Harrison.
Of that. You know, they reshot.
Yep.
They
reshot. Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Just go. We're rolling. Let's go.
That's one. Yes. Yeah, the famous I love you, you know, bit. It's just like, so it's, you know, just, and then, you know, it's, obviously, Return of the Jedi is—it's not the strongest. It's not Shakespeare. Let's be honest. It's not the strongest script, but it's got some good stuff. I think the problem is. Hear me out. This is interesting. I'm babbling here. This is interesting.
Oh, you're fine.
Actually, because we all know that, you know, Larry Kasdan, he wanted to take the story for Return of the Jedi in a certain direction. And didn't get to do that because George said, no, everybody lives, we have a happy ending, this is the way it's gotta be. So he was following the rules. If they're just gonna let Larry write what he wants, then fantastic, it might be really interesting, but that's not gonna happen. I mean, he's gotta follow a strict treatment that's been written. If anything, he's being brought in, as a dialogue writer. I don't know that dialogue's his strongest suit, and maybe Jamie can give me some quotes from Dreamcatcher, and we'll decide.
Well, I just gave you one, Jonesy. The end. You know,
yes.
Now, and that's copied from the book, so.
Oh, that's right.
There you go. Well, yeah, I mean, like the big chill days are long gone, so yeah, his dialogue days are done.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm clapping to you, Jim, right now, because you've said everything I feel. I mean, that's absolutely true. All of it. Particularly you, Luke. God love you.
I thought Phil was right with fan pandering. I think that's exactly.
But I liked your point, though, about Ken Burr, because he's young and hungry. Or he's not really young and hungry, because he's a very successful screenwriter and producer. But the fact of the matter is, this guy, he's in his late 30s, early 40s. He's a guy who was a kid when Star Wars came out. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of people you wanted to handle this now.
Jamie's angling for a job. Let's hear it.
No, I'm directing. I'm directing the Man of Steel sequel. You guys didn't know that? Shit,
no,
what are you talking
I didn't.
About?
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Yeah.
Now, hold on, Zach. I gotta take this. You know. No, but you do want someone who is. Yeah, it's just it's how should I put this? Fan pandering. You want someone who's he's different. He's young. He's done these. I don't think it's a bad thing that Ken Burr – everyone's complaining about Ken Burr, but they think Kasdan is a great idea. I guarantee you Ken Burr's work is better than Kasdan's in the last 15 years. No doubt about it. Who's talking about Grand Canyon? Exactly. You know, I mean, do I need I say more?
I was just going to say there's one more important element is that it's all well and good to say Larry Kasdan's writing number two. Okay, who's directing number two? Because very often, you know, we've heard so many stories about, you know, writers are sometimes terribly treated by the filmmaking process, especially when you have the writer first and then you bring in the director, because what so often happens, if you've got a named director, is that they'll look at their script, they'll initially say, before they sign on the dotted line, they'll say, oh, this is a great script, I can't wait to work on this, and then they sign on the dotted line, they come in and say, you know, I want to get my own writer to come in to work on this. Exactly. So like Larry will get the boot, somebody else will work on it. You know, this is Star Wars we're talking about. This is a big deal. How many ghostwriters are going to be working on this flipping thing that aren't going to get any credit?
I guarantee you Kathleen Kennedy will be a writer on this movie. I mean, she's the one really she's going to be this is on her. She's had this position for years to Spielberg, who is still the most powerful film director in the world, and she's maintain a great working relationship. That's why I have confidence that it's her running the empire now. I like that.
Everything is proceeding as I had foreseen.
You know, she seems like a really nice lady.
Absolutely.
That's image. You've got to be a... she looks tough. Like your mom. No, she looks like your mom, though. She looks like your aunt. Like, and she's got kids, and I'm sure she's a nice lady. But on the job, I guarantee you, she is the baddest motherfucker on set, because you have to be. I mean, I'm not making a joke. Like, that's the job that's required. So she's running it now. I guarantee you, she's going to be ruthless, because you have to be. Nothing wrong with that. But, you know, as for a director, I mean, I don't know, man. I think some people try to overthink this, because it's a Star Wars movie. Get a journeyman. Make it fun. I mean, have action.
In some ways, they're almost self-directing types of movies, too.
Like James Bond. Real.
Yeah, it's great to get a top-notch director, but, you know, if you've got a competent director, hell, they could even hire what's-his-face, the guy that nobody likes that came in for X-Men Last Stand.
Ratner, yeah.
Ratner. They could even bring him in, God forbid, but... He could probably turn on a good Star Wars movie.
I think he would make a perfectly fine Star Wars
movie. I'd agree with that, actually. I think the first one, because we were talking about that, weren't we, Lou? The first one out of the gate should be the fun one, the adventure one, one that's got a real pulse. Ratner could actually pull that off.
I think it absolutely is going to be that movie.
I wouldn't like it, but yeah. He would get the job done, no doubt.
We're going to wrap it up in a few minutes. We've gone over. It's been a great discussion,
well,
by the way.
James,
but actually, I wanted to ask. Well, I wanted to add one more thing, though. I had a curiosity, so I guess related to Star Wars here. Is do you guys think there's more pressure on this movie of the return of the franchise, or do you think? I mean, excuse me, not pressure, hype. Do you think there will be more hype to Episode 7 than there was Episode 1? Because everyone talks about this is one of the most anticipated movies of all time. We're all old enough to remember. Phil and I are in our late 20s. Lou is Obi-Wan Kenobi, so we're not going to say his age.
And then his late 20s a couple of times around the world.
He's He's been in his late 20s, exactly. But we remember Phantom Menace. There has been no movie in my lifetime, hype-wise, that has come anywhere close to the hype of The Phantom Menace. And there never will be, in my opinion. No. But people are going to say it. Is it possible? Could this come close to that kind of level of anticipation? I don't think so. No, I mean, it's going to be huge.
Yes, it will, but it's going to be a case of once bitten, twice shy. They're going to want to see the proof from the pudding. Then, if it is good, then things will go crazy.
I will say, I mean, that's actually one of the reasons why I don't think it will be out in July of 2015, just because, one, logistics. I don't think there's enough time to get it finished. But also, the general public likes the Star Wars prequels. I know that people don't like admitting that online, but, you know, there's a real world outside of your laptop, buddy. No offense. But no, I'm not trying to be negative here. But the fact of the matter is that anything that comes out that summer is overshadowed by Star Wars. That's why I don't think it comes out that summer, because you know what it overshadows? It overshadows the Avengers 2.
Mm-hmm.
Automatically. And Avengers 2, I mean, Avengers is the third biggest movie of all time, as we said.
And but, Justice League.
And Justice League.
That's going to get made, yeah. No.
Well, according to some recent casting news, they're working on it.
I don't...
We'll get to
Okay, let me just say about that, though. No, real quick. I think there will be a Justice League movie. Yeah, I'm not saying that, but I know that there's going to be one in 2015. My opinion is, and I'll repeat this for the next year, so get ready, kids. I think if Superman goes over the way I think it will, I have a hunch that movie's going to go over a lot. That's going to be a much more popular, successful movie than I think we're anticipating right now, Man of Steel. If that does it, I think wiser heads at Warner Brothers are going to say, you know what? Let's do the sequel in 2 years instead. I just don't think there's enough time for Justice League. I don't think there's anticipation. But if Superman goes over huge and people want more of that, they're going to say, you know what? Let's get the sequel out. July 4th, 2015, it's a go. I think that's what happens.
We can talk about that maybe next week with our friends.
Sure.
You give a shit. But unfortunately, you're not talking to somebody who does. But I agree with you, Jamie. I think the reason why... well, there was a lot of things that came into play with Phantom Menace, but it seems to me like it was almost the birth of the internet for me. It wasn't, but it felt that way. You know, it was the birth of a lot of things regarding the internet, things which are commonplace now, like the leaked social media, campouts, countdowns, the leaked trailer, all these devouring.
I mean, you guys remember when someone made a South Park version of the Phantom Menace teaser, and that got like a million hits? Like, we're old now to acknowledge that. No one remembers that, but like, that was huge.
Everybody did their own version. People did it in Lego. People did it live action. It was crazy. I remember tons. But yeah, it's going to be hard, but don't forget, first of all, anything's possible. Number two, I didn't feel, how big Phantom Menace was going to be until that trailer. Until then, it was just a couple of stills and a nice poster, and something that obviously we were all really curious about. Once that trailer hit, I mean, it just went from, you know, level 1 to level 10. Hype! Boom! And there was nothing else like it. It could happen again.
It's the first time I can remember that the teaser that was in front of A Bug's Life. Or, no, it was in front of Meet Joe Black, I think.
We got it in front of A Bug's Life.
I don't know how you guys can remember stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
Yes, sir. But that's why you love us.
And the Bruce Willis movie. Some people got it in front of that. That was that weekend as well.
Denzel Washington, Bruce Willis, and Annette Bening. And it was directed by John McTiernan.
I feel proud that I just remember seeing it at some point.
I think it was directed. I'm guessing on the McTiernan. That seems like a McTiernan movie to me. I don't remember. Is it, Phil?
I don't. Look, we're making Lou feel uncomfortable. Let's move on.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll only talk about good John McTiernan movies. Die Hard's pretty good.
And Predator.
I've heard of that one.
You've heard of that
one. There's another one coming up, by the way. That's for another podcast.
No, excuse me. Okay, I have to correct myself now for anyone says anything. It was God Bless White People himself, Edward Zwick, directed it, actually. I apologize.
Oh, good job. There we go.
I know. I got John McTiernan mixed up with Edward Zwick. My nerd license has been revoked. This is my final podcast. Thank you for listening to me for the last 5 years.
Oh, like Ellen is. Like you're missing next week. Don't give me that shit.
That's right. I had to miss it for personal reasons, and I didn't want to. I did want to, but in the moment that it was, I'm not going to go into details, but something happened personally, and needless to say, everything else that ever existed in my life disappeared for that one day, which is like, fuck the world. So Phil knows.
There's one. We need to end basically with an in memoriam. Not somebody who's actually died, but somebody who basically, in a lot of ways, has died. We haven't mentioned him at all during our Star Wars discussion, but how could we not? Rick McCullum.
Yes.
Poor Rick.
I think he's been out for a long. I was actually kind of surprised. I thought everyone knew that he had already left. Actually, okay.
I'd kind of taken it for granted. I just didn't think about it. But then I realized how, you know, for so often he really was the mouth of George, like the mouth of Sauron. He was
the de facto fan representation. He was the guy who went to all the conventions and did all the handshakes. He kissed all the babies. I mean, I joke when I say that last line, but I mean, he did do that, though. He was the guy who did all the interviews and stuff because George just didn't want to do it all. That old footage of him from 95 saying, like, the footage was so far gone that unless we didn't change it right now, it would have been gone. And Phil, I mean, Lou is just looking at me so, like, I cannot believe you remember that, too. But I do! When they restored Star Wars, they restored the masters of them for the last original release, which, actually, a side note, we will get the original versions of the trilogy now.
Oh, yes!
We're going to get them. I think it's obvious at this point now that this change has been made. We're going to totally get them.
We never talked about that either, Lou, but yeah, all those people on originaltrilogy.com, when they heard this news, they must have been like, there is hope. There is. There is one new, there is a new hope. There is totally.
You know, yeah, but I'm sure George has got a clause in his contract that says he can't release them until after my death, but we'll see.
You think so? That's interesting. I never would have thought of that.
It's possible. I mean, they want to be respectful to George, but at the same time,
no,
this Disney...
No, I disagree respectfully. No, I don't think Lucas cares anymore. I think he's like, I don't, whatever, do whatever you want. I saw those interviews. They keep releasing these videos of him and Kathleen Kennedy talking. They clearly shot it all at once, and then like they're breaking it up for like 8 months worth of video. But
do you still think they're going to do those 3D reissues, or do they think they've scuppered that?
They've announced they're doing them. Like two of them are coming out next year, like next September.
Yeah, but they're the ones we don't want to see.
Oh, you mean through the originals? Sure.
I just thought it was interesting. It's just like it's still a long, you know, term plan, and it just doesn't seem necessary anymore. You know, we don't need to be reminded about Star Wars.
I think Fox might do it. I mean, that's the thing, that Fox still holds distribution on those six movies, and they completely own the original movie for quite a while. But there's going to be there will be some kind of deal that Disney will make so that Fox can keep the original films all together. Like they'll let them. You know, I don't think past 2020 we'll stop seeing the 20th Century Fox logo in front of Empire. Like, no, they'll let them keep it. There will be some kind of agreement. Because let's be honest here, Disney's got the whole pie. Like, if Fox wants to keep their little portion, that's fine. But, I mean, that's still a lot of money, mind you. But, you know, they're making new movies now. They're gonna have cartoons. They're gonna have all this crazy shit. And the toys. And the comic books. And all this stuff. They'll let Fox keep their point. Yeah, it's okay.
No, it's just the toys, dude. I thought about, you know, there's nothing about Star Wars merchandising that bothers me except the toys. I've talked about this before. I have no idea how Hasbro can keep making Star Wars toys year after year after year. They have done everything now. How can they keep making them and still be making profit? There's no way even collectors can keep up with all of it. Nobody owns every Star Wars figure. It is impossible. And at that point, you would think all the collectors would just stop. Apparently not, because they keep making them. And I just thought, what a wonderful day it would be one day if I could wake up in a world where they've cancelled the line and there are no more Star Wars toys. No, that's not happening now, is it? No. No, we've got a whole... the 20 years of toys.
No, not only will there be new toys, but there will be like the new Lobot with a hat, you know, or with a wig. That'll be the new thing, and everyone will go crazy. They'll be like, but it's the same Lobot, and someone will go, but he's got hair now, you know, so shit like that. So who would play Lobot now?
I think. Michael Sheen, I don't know. We said he was going to be in it, didn't we?
We did. I didn't.
We did. You totally came up with that idea. I remember you did.
Now I remember.
Yes.
I believe you. I just don't like. I don't. I say a lot.
And now we've come full circle to that Siskel and Ebert thing he was talking about.
True, actually,
we have. Jamie, batteries are running down. I think it's time to wrap up.
I think it is, yeah. Did you say my flatteries are running down? That's true, that too, actually.
That's that. What are we doing next week, Jamie?
Next week, okay, ladies and gentlemen, next week is the big enchilada, the end of the year before you go home and celebrate the holidays with your families, kids. That's right, it's time for The Hobbit.
Shut up.
Mr. Sisamata here will be one of the few. He might be the only one. We got a number of people coming on next week. He might be the only one to see it in the controversial 48 frames per second. We'll get his opinion on that. I'll be here. Bill will be here. A few others. Don't want to jinx it because shit can come up and then like three people say, where was that other guy you promised?
Statue to Darkness nine-minute preview. We'll tell you all about it.
And the movie, and does it drag ass? Are the reviews we've read as apologetic as they sound? Next week, folks, on Movie Mode. Until then, though, the balcony is closed. Good night, folks.